This episode is brought to you by Boncharge. Are you stressed out? Do your muscles ache? Are you looking for a way to get better sleep? Well then, Boncharge is for you. What's Boncharge? Boncharge is a company that makes an infrared sleeping bag that is serving as a sauna. I'll say that again. It's an infrared sleeping bag that actually acts as an in-home sauna. You plug it in, it heats up, you lay down inside of it, you do absolutely nothing, you get a sick sweat session in, you calm down, you decompress, life is easy. You get out, you dry off, you unplug it, you dry your infrared, your little sleeping bag off, you put it away, and you're done. If you want to get the benefits of this all in your house without having to go to a spa, without having to go to a resort, or go to some nasty, disgusting gym and get into their sauna that you don't even know how well they're cleaning it, just go. I'm gonna just not even going to give you a website. Just Google Boncharge. That's Boncharge. That's Boncharge. And if you put in the code Mahoney, Mahoney, that's M-A-H-O-N-E-Y, you will get 15% savings. If you can't remember any of this, don't worry. It'll be in the show notes. Just click on the link right in the show notes. All right, enjoy the rest of your day. Bye. Welcome to another episode of 6-Minute Monday, where I give you 6 tips and tricks to make you more efficient and effective in the weight room, the boardroom, and on a football field. And I'm going to give you a recap of what happened at this weekend's Tag Team Challenge. So here we go. Tip number one, it's an exercise tip. I hit on this a little bit last weekend, and it may seem redundant. It may seem like, hey, coach, you're the guy who talks about zero shoes, so why are you even giving us this tip? Well, my tip for you is to do your entire workout, if you can, with no shoes on. Now, there's a big caveat there to the if you can, because if you can't, well, then go with zero shoes. But if you can, so for example, I work out in my garage, and I worked out with no shoes on, just socks, and the difference is huge. It's the same difference you'd get between zero shoes and a sneaker. Even though zero shoes are like, you can feel the ground and it's basically not wearing shoes, there's still something there. So last week, I did my workout with no shoes on. Everything. I was a little worried about doing this at first because I used to warm up with no shoes on and I would jump rope with no shoes on, but that would be it. But now I went full bore, no shoes, just socks because I was worried about my jumps. But it seems like my feet have gotten strengthened so much. And part of that is from sprinting in zero shoes, that now I'm able to do a vertical jump with no shoes on without feeling banged up. Now, the reason that I like this so much is that you really get to feel the ground. Not only is it opening up the fascia in the body, bottom part of your feet, but as I'm doing a deadlift, I can legitimately feel every ounce of that ground. And as I'm picking the weight up off the ground, I'm actually pushing my foot through the ground. So if you can, give it a shot. If you can't, if you work out in a filthy, disgusting gym, wear zero shoes. If you work out in a gym where someone's probably going to drop a plate on your foot, then definitely don't do it. Maybe just warm up with no shoes on and then get into your workout with shoes on. This is my advice for you. Take it as you will. Tip number two, something that I am experimenting with. I am now going back, given some new life changes, some new work schedule changes, I'm now going back to more of a quote-unquote split routine in my lifting slash sprinting regimen. And when I say split routine, I'm not saying I do an upper body one day and lower body the next day. I'm talking about I am splitting up my workouts. So I will do a Monday completely off. A Tuesday, I'm going to sprint and lift. A Wednesday, off. A Thursday, sprint and lift. A Friday, primer. A Saturday, tough man. A Sunday primer. That is going to be my workout. And what you'll notice, it's going to be a day high intensity, Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, followed by a day of low intensity, Monday off, Wednesday off, Friday primer, Sunday primer. So it's going to be high intensity, low intensity, high intensity, low intensity. Why am I doing this? Well, one, my body actually felt better the last time. I'm just going like in my mind. I felt better last time doing it. But when I go with the science, the data, I've noticed that in the old way I was doing it, I was just recently not taking any consecutive days off in terms of high and low. That was beating me up. And I could see in the data that my sprints were getting slower. And it seemed like the heavier I was lifting, the slower I was getting. And maybe it was because I was sprinting on the day after I lifted heavy. So yeah, I hit a PR on my, humble brag by the way, I hit a PR on my trap bar deadlift, my training weight, but then the next day I'm slower. So what I'm trying to do right now is experiment to see if that day off between my lift and my next sprint, or my high day and my low day, is that going to get me back to that PR and sprinting time that I had about 2 months ago. More to come. I am experimenting with it. Tip number three, something that I am watching that's moved me. It's a show. It's a movie called Split. It's an old movie. It's a kind of like a comic book slash thriller movie, a little disturbing movie. Because Split is about this guy, he's a supervillain that has multiple personalities. He has split personalities. But something that was moving me in it was that the doctor who was treating this guy, her premise is that the mind is so strong that if you truly believe in something, that it can give you these huge physiological benefits. So this guy, one of his split personalities, he thought he was invincible, and he became super strong. He was able to, like, climb on walls. Another one of his personalities thought he was sick, and he felt sick, and he actually legitimately was sick. Anyway, I'm not saying that this movie is true by any stretch of the imagination, but it did absolutely make me rethink about the power of your mindset and how it impacts your actions, it impacts your attitude, it impacts the way you live. And I've been trying to think more positively as I was approaching situations. Probably weird connection to this movie, which I thought was actually very brilliantly made. And the actor who played the guy in Split was brilliant, because I think he had, like, I don't know, 10 or 15 different personalities that he played well. Either way, great movie. I want to thank Drew Olson for the recommendation about 5 years ago. I don't know why I decided to watch it now. But, again, the power of the mind, just think it through for yourself. See how it impacts you. Now, with respect to power of the mind, the quote that I am thinking about, it's actually a full, like, back and forth in Batman. So it's in Batman. It's one of the Christian Bale Batmans when Batman is trying to climb out of the hole. Now, I've seen this movie a bunch of times. I don't know, maybe 10. And I thought about the premise of him climbing out of the hole of this struggle. But then I'm listening to a Joe Rogan podcast, and this guy talks about Batman climbing out of the hole. And he talks about the conversation that Batman has with another prisoner next to him. And I somehow missed the whole conversation. All I thought was, Batman's got to climb out of the hole. He's got to bounce back from something dark, something that beat him up. And life is tough. And maybe that is a metaphor for you climbing back from whatever hole you've been dug in. It's Batman literally climbing out of a hole to get out of prison. But this conversation, I'm going to read it to you. And then I'm going to talk about how it hit me in an entirely new way. So this blind prisoner says to Batman, he says, "You do not fear death. You think this makes you strong. It makes you weak." I'll repeat that sentence again. Because he says to Batman, like, "Are you scared?" And he said, "I'm not scared of dying in here." And he said, "You do not fear death. You think this makes you strong. It makes you weak." And Bruce Wayne, a.k.a. Batman, says, "Why?" And the blind prisoner says, "How can you move faster than possible? Fight longer than possible without the most powerful impulse of the spirit, the fear of death." So Batman says, "I do fear death. I fear dying in here while my city burns and there's no one there to save it." And then the blind prisoner says, "Well, then make the climb." And Bruce Wayne says, "How?" Because Bruce Wayne has tried to make this climb out of the hole, but he did it with a rope. The problem is that he did it with a rope, and because he did it with the rope, he had a safety net. And what this guy is telling him is, do it without the rope. Do it without the rope. And then your fear of death is going to be so strong. It'll be so strong that you can climb out of that hole. So where's all this going? Like, why am I talking about this movie that I've seen 100 times and missed this whole part about doing it without the rope because it gives you the fear of death? Well, maybe if you're at a crossroads in your life, and maybe if you have a safety net, maybe it's too safe, and maybe it's not the thing that's pushing you to become the great person that you need to be or make the change in your life that you need to change. I don't know. Think about this for you. I am a person who likes to mitigate risk, but maybe if the mitigation is too strong, maybe it doesn't give you the push, the nudge to take your life to the next level. I am not telling you to go rock climbing without safety equipment. I'm not telling you to drive without your seatbelt on. I'm not saying any of that. Nothing ridiculous like that. But what I am saying is that if you have too comfortable of a cushion to fall on, it may not give you the push you need to take your life to the next level. You've heard the stories of people who had great lives. And a lot of those times, there was something. There was this incredible push that had to push them out of their current circumstance. This incredible uncomfortableness that pushed them out of their circumstance. So think about that again. What that guy said, that blind prisoner, that's what his name was in the movie. How can you move faster than possible, fight longer than possible, without the most powerful impulse of the spirit, the fear of death? Again, this is an over-exaggeration, but maybe it is the fear of sitting in a cubicle your entire life. Maybe it is the fear of not looking or feeling the way you want to live your entire life. Maybe it is the fear of not having freedom for your entire life. Okay, sorry, going off on a tangent here, but that movie, that quote, it really hit me hard, especially as it's something that I've seen multiple times. I cannot believe I missed it. Okay, tip number five, a productivity tip. I don't even know if this is really a productivity tip, but I heard this from a sleep expert. He said, if you wake up in the middle of the night and you say, oh my God, I woke up at 2:17. And he said, how do you know it's 2:17? Well, I looked at the clock. Well, that's a problem. He said, I think it's Matt Walker who said this. He said, if you wake up in the middle of the night, do not look at the clock. Not only is the light not good for your eyes and it resets your circadian rhythm and helps you not fall asleep the right way, but also the stress of looking at that clock does you no good. Because now you're thinking, oh my God, it's only 2:17. Why do I keep waking up? What does it matter if it's 2:17? What does it matter if it's 2:17 or 6:17? You wake up, you close your eyes, you got your alarm clock, do not look at the clock. I have been fighting this urge for the last 2 weeks of doing this. Some travel got my sleep patterns off, and I gotta say, not looking at the clock at first freaked me out, because I'm a control freak, but over time, it actually legitimately did help, and it's relieved my stress pattern, and also it stopped me looking at something like my phone, the clock, whatever it is. Okay, tip number six, the craziest thing that I saw all week. And I always worry about this thing, but the Owl Howl, it just never fails. So yesterday, we are training at Owl Howl Park. We are dead in the middle of our workout. And as always, there is a soccer team coming. Look, we share the fields with everybody, but there's four open fields or three open fields. Where we just happen to be on one of those three open fields. This guy comes and legitimately plants his flag. Bang! He sets up his goalpost smack in the middle of our workout. Now, I'm assuming they have a permit to play on the field. They don't use the entirety of the field. They could have used the other half of the field. The guy could have started setting up his drill or his goal on the other end of the field first, but no, he sets up his first goalpost right smack in the middle of our drill. For whatever reason, I mean, a more reasonable person comes over to him and says, hey, why don't you set up the other way so that we're not in their way, and they do. So someone talked a little bit of sense into this guy, but eventually they ended up resetting up the goalpost right in the middle, right smack in the middle of our workout. And it's tough. I want to share the field. I want to be a good quote-unquote neighbor, but it's impossible for me to figure out when their game schedule is and when they're going to start. We've been going earlier to avoid all this. So that was the first weirdest part. The second weirdest part is one of the players on this soccer team or game or whatever, he is walking onto their field, which is in the middle of now what is our field, and he walks directly through one of our drills. Like, there is a guy sitting on a barrel, a bucket, pulling a sled with a chain attached to it, and he walks right over the chain and almost gets clipped by one of our guys. So, I don't know. I want to live in peace and harmony. I actually do respect these guys getting up and getting after it. I just, I don't know. How do we stay out of each other's way? We'll try to be as considerate as possible. Okay, now let's get into what happened at this weekend's Tag Team Challenge. So what was the challenge? Just a quick recap. We have these two sandbags that weigh 40 pounds. They are 40 yards away from the start line. At the start line is a sled with three 45-pounders on it, and you have to run down, pick up those sandbags, put them on top of the sled. You then have to drag this sled, which has a chain attached to it, 40 yards around a cone. If you knock over the cone, you got to pick up the cone. If a sandbag falls off the sled, you have to go pick it back up. You have to bring that sandbag on top of the sled. You have to bring those sandbags on top of the sled back to the start line, and then take those sandbags back to where they originally were. So again, it's sprint to pick up the sandbags, put them on top of the sled, pull the sled or drag the sled around a cone, bring the sled with the sandbags on top of it back to a start line, then take those sandbags off the sled and sprint and bring them back to where they originally were. That is the drill. This week, we have two teams, one team with three people, the Golden Company, one team with four people, the Dudes, and the Golden Company, they get to decide who goes first or second. So they decide this week that they are going to go first. Why do they do this? My guess is that they probably thought they were going to lose, because they only have three guys, and this is a pretty taxing drill. And look, if you only have three guys, you're probably going to lose, and if they lose, they have to immediately go into this head-to-head challenge. So they decide to go first. They what they decide to do with, because they only have three people, is they have Pete Baragi. He sprints by himself. He picks up both bags by himself. He puts them on top of the sled. And then Brian Weintraub, a.k.a. Future, and Joe Derradina, they drag that sled around that cone that's 40 yards away. When they make that turn, things look pretty clean until they get all the way around the turn, and then a bag falls off. So they have to go and put the bag back on top of the sled. And then they knock over the cone. So they have two major issues. They finally get the sled back to the start line, and then I believe Baragi picks up the sandbags and sprints back to where those bags were, and they finish in about 1 minute and 10 seconds. Let me just check my math again so I don't look like a jerk. Yeah, they finish in about 1 minute and 10 seconds. I'm blowing this one. So anyway, they finish in 1 minute and 10 seconds. The next team up has Yuski, Galli, Sarno, Cortese. So now they have two guys that can go and sprint and get the bags. So they go, and it's Yuski and Cortese. They sprint down. They both take one bag. They put it on top of the sled, and they've carefully, now because they've went second, they've devised a plan where they take one of the handles of the bags, and they loop it over the pole that holds the weights on the sled. So they go. They drag this Sarno and Galli. They drag this thing flawlessly. They pull it around the cone flawlessly. This thing is like they're doing a turn on the Indy 500. No problems at all. They bring it back to the start line. Yuski and Cortese pick up bags. They sprint it back, and they finish in 52.8 seconds. So they completely and totally dominate the drill, and they win. So what does this leave us with? So now the dudes get their sixth win of the season. They improve the record to 6-5. And now they have to pick two people to go head-to-head in the head-to-head challenge from the losing team. But guess what? There's only one person on that team who doesn't have two losses. So Weintraub has two losses. He's out. Derradina has two losses. He's out. So the only guy left is Baragi. So Baragi can't go against Baragi. So I give this winning team a choice. I say, listen, winning team, dudes, you can either just let it be and don't have any head-to-head challenges, or you can pick one of you guys from the winning team, and now you can go against Baragi head-to-head. So they get together, have a long conversation, and what do they decide? They decide, okay, Joe Sarno is going to go against Pete Baragi. Joe Sarno is going to go against Pete Baragi. Well, what's the challenge, you ask? The challenge is the same exact thing by yourself, except I was going to make it, I think, 30 yards, 25 yards instead of 40 yards because I'm a nice guy. But Tom Galli, being a nicer guy and a smarter guy than me, said, Coach, let's move it to 20 yards because if you go 25, you're now going to be in the line of fire with the soccer team that has now taken up three quarters of the field. All right, cool. So we move it back to 20 yards. Baragi, because his team lost, Sarno elected for him to go first. But before they go, I throw out, listen, guys, do you want to make this a double or nothing challenge? So what's a double or nothing challenge? What a double or nothing challenge is that if you have no losses in the season, before a challenge, you could say double or nothing. And what double or nothing means is that if you win, you get two wins. If you lose, you get two losses. So you're basically throwing it all on the table. You're putting your life savings on the table here. Again, if you win, you get two wins. If you lose, you get two losses. Both guys do not have to say it. One guy can say double or nothing, and he gets two losses if he loses and two wins if he wins. But if the other guy says nothing, it's the same for him. One win, one loss based on the outcome of the event. So both of these guys, they both elect to have a gentleman's double or nothing agreement. So Baragi goes first, and you could see that it's a hell of a lot harder with one guy than it was with two guys. So thank God good old Tom Galli made this thing go 1 minute and 10 seconds. Again, it was a hell of a lot harder. Not only are you by yourself, not only are you fatigued from the last event, but also the ground is starting to dry up. And Baragi finishes in 1 minute and 10 seconds. Now that time may seem great compared to his team's 1 minute and 10 seconds, but it was half the distance. And he was getting smoked. You could see that this thing was really challenging. So Baragi finishes in 1 minute and 10 seconds. Sarno's up next. He goes, and he finishes in 1 minute and 12 seconds. But, there's a but here. He was on pace to win this thing, just based on all his times back and forth, except for one fatal flaw. When he goes and picks up those two sandbags to start off the event, he knocks over the cones. Notice the word cones. He knocks over the cones. He has to go back. He's probably like I don't know, 5 or 6 yards away, maybe 8 yards away from the cones before he realizes he knocked over cones. He goes back to pick up the cone. But he's also carrying all the sandbags with him. He doesn't, like, put them down. So he's carrying them back an extra 5 or 6 yards. So he wastes all this time, all this energy, going back to pick up the cones. And, what I'm more impressed by is that he only finished basically 2 seconds behind Baraji with a time of 1:12. That's what I'm more impressed by, because he wasted a solid 10 seconds going back to pick up the cones that he knocked down. So why do I keep emphasizing the word cones instead of cone? Well, I put all the cones on top of each other down at the end. And Yusuke said, Coach, why did you have to put all the cones down there? So part of my reasoning was, and the wind wasn't that bad, but when those cones are, there's like one cone, there's a shot that a cone gets knocked over easily by the wind or by you brushing against it. So part of my reasoning was, let me make this cone as heavy as possible to eliminate the likelihood that this cone gets knocked over for no reason. Now, people think I like to have these stipulations or these penalties about cones. I don't. This stuff annoys me. But it's always a point of debate. If a guy knocks over a cone or not, is it a penalty or not? So I was trying to, at least in my mind, keep as many cones there as possible to reduce the likelihood that the cone would get knocked over. But the other part of this is that the more cones there are, the higher the cones are, and I believe that's what happened with Joe Sarno, because the cones were so high, the bottom of the sandbag hit the top of the cone and boop, knocked it over. So Sarno loses. Now he has 2 losses. Now he is eliminated from head-to-head challenges. He is now the 6th person who's eliminated from head-to-head challenges. And Baraji, because he gets the win, he got 6 points on the day. So people eliminated from head-to-head challenges: Shalasi, Cortese, Derrida, Weintraub, Sarno, Wallet, out. They can compete in tag team challenges. They cannot compete in head-to-head challenges. Right now, the top 4 guys, the top 4 seeds, Galli, Baraji, Shalasi, Arbato, in that order. And if the season ended today, remember, only the top 12 seeds get into the playoffs, well, then we would have 3 people on a play-in to get that number 12 seed. It would be Carroll, Carpentieri, and Mulligan. So this is a turning out to be extremely interesting season. We're not even into May yet. We got 6 guys knocked out, and we would have 3 people on a play-in to be the number 12 seed. So that is it. That is not it. The other thing I'll say, and I was going to say this as the weirdest thing that happened all week, but the other slightly interesting thing that happened this week, let's say 2 slightly interesting things. One is, let's just say, I'm going to leave the other one out. No, I won't. So the first slightly interesting thing is that Jimmy Yusuke purchased his own stopwatch. Not because he's a good guy and because he wants to have an extra stopwatch in case I lose my stopwatch. No, he purchased his own stopwatch to try and prove to the world that my timing is grossly incorrect. So he was timing events that I was timing at the same time to make sure that our stopwatches were close and that there was no quote-unquote funny business with Coach Mahoney trying to help one team win. And as it turns out, they were pretty damn near identical in the times that we hit. Now, there's always going to be variances in stopwatch time between one person and another. Who's got a faster trigger finger? Who's got a slower trigger finger? Who's got a better angle? There's a million variances, which is why this is not always an exact science, and this is why I will do rematches if it's too close to call. So, and maybe it's a different stopwatch. You know, that's definitely a different stopwatch, different styles. So there's going to be different things. The one thing that's consistent about me is that it's me, and it's the same stopwatch both times. And kind of trained myself to not use my thumb, to use my pointer finger. A little coach's trick there that you use your thumb. It has different stopwatch times. Anyway, he used it, and it turned out we were relatively close. No apology from James Yusuke. No, Coach, I apologize for trying to make you look stupid. But whatever, it's all part of the business. It's all part of the game. The second thing was that we get to training, and Andrew Cortese, the captain of the dudes, is not there. I say to everybody, where is Cortese? He's not supposed to be here, Coach. Here you are, screwing us again. He's supposed to be gone for 2 weeks straight. So I say, okay, can somebody show me that in a text message, because I don't remember seeing that he wasn't going to be here this week. So Sarno picks up his phone and pulls out a note from Cortese saying he wouldn't be here for 2 weeks straight. And I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Like, he already wasn't here for 2 weeks straight. Maybe I'm losing my mind. Maybe these guys are right. Maybe I have no idea what I'm doing as the Vince McMahon of the show. But who comes pulling up into the parking lot? But Andrew Cortese, late. He comes late, not a lot, maybe by a minute or two. But again, no apology from Jimmy Uski. No, coach, you were right, I was wrong. So, you know, I'm just going to leave it at that. Again, I also think it's amazing how much airtime Jimmy Uski gets on this podcast. For people that don't know him, they are continually asking me, who is this guy? Why is he mentioned every podcast? Who is he? For those of you who don't know me, is a remarkable human being. He's also a massive pain in my life, but he is remarkable, and he does get a lot of airtime. All right. Anyway, that is it for what happened at this weekend's Tag Team Challenge. Next weekend's challenge, I haven't quite figured it out yet, so I have some ideas. But now with this whole soccer thing, it's making me doubt the challenge that I want to do if I'm going to have the real estate to do it. So this week I had a challenge in mind. I had to change it. I had to change it because there was a soccer game going on in the very spot of the field where I wanted to do something. But I will say this. The event is going, I don't even know what it is yet, so I can't tell you. I'm not going to know. We're going to show up on Saturday. You will have a challenge ready to go. But, yeah, apologies, guys. Not this week. I have two ideas in my head, and I don't know which one I want to use. And it might involve different toys. So, I'll say this. At least what I'm thinking right now, it either involves a slider and a farmer's walk, or a slider, a farmer's walk, and a sled. That's all I'm going to say. I can't give you any more information. There's no puzzles. I'll give you that much. It's going to be a slider and a farmer's walk, or a slider, a farmer's walk, and a sled. But I need to figure out the what based on the field and where we're going to operate. All right, everybody. Go attack your Monday. Bye. This episode is brought to you by Zero Shoes, a company that is perfectly named. Why? Because when you're wearing their shoes, you feel like you're walking around completely and totally barefoot. A.K.A. like you're not wearing any shoes. A.K.A. like you are wearing zero shoes. Now, we've all heard the benefits of barefoot training, but who wants to walk into a gym without any shoes on your feet? First of all, it's gross, and second of all, it's disgusting. Now, the other benefits of zero shoes is not only are they functional, but they're also fashionable. So, you've seen many a time people walk in the gym with these minimalist shoes and they look like a freak. Not with zero shoes. You're going to blend right in. Also, they have a wide toe box so that your toes are not all scrunched together in the front like they normally are with any standard training sneaker or cleat. Now, to get your shoes, go to zeroshoes.com/go/MahoneyAT. Again, that's zeroshoes.com/go/MahoneyAT. And that zero is spelt with an X. It is X-E-R-O. Again, I'll say it again. It's X-E-R-O. Get your zero shoes today.